Yo,
what is going on, everybody? AJ Capasso here.
We switched.
I know that was really weird. I don't know. Switch is back. Yeah,
that was weird.
Yeah,
I don't know why that happened.
Anyway, well,
you see that big clock? I like that big
clock. Yeah, that clock is good, man. You know,
yeah,
that clock definitely fits the room.
Yeah, wow. You know, I discovered that. The setup I have here is good. No, with the jackets and all that crap gone and stuff. But the problem is where I have the room set up, if I have the shades open,
yeah,
for the light to come in, the natural light, it's dark. Can't even see me.
Oh, man.
It's kind of a pain in the butt. So I'm actually thinking about maybe moving it back to the window, so at least the natural light's behind the camera, because with this camera, with the Logitech webcams, you have to have light behind the camera in order for it to work. And that's why I have the ring light right behind the camera right there, so it looks better. But it looks really, really super clear today.
Yeah.
Which it hasn't in the past, so I don't know what's going on.
Well, today's good connection.
It is. Hopefully it'll stay that way.
Right?
So,
right.
We've been away for a little while, longer than expected. Yeah. I know we were only planning to take a week off, but we ended up taking 2 weeks off.
Yeah, we did. But that's all right. It's time for a new season, new people, an amazing show about the Kray twins today. Anyone who knows anything about gangsters knows the Kray twins.
Yeah.
So,
and I will say this was suggested, these two, they were suggested by Emma. Rosie's mother.
Okay.
He said you should do a show on the Kray twins, and I said, okay, well, let me take a look at them, and because they're from, you know where they're from. we all know that part of the world for some reason. I don't know why. They're crazy over there.
Kray, Kray. Yeah.
They're crazy over there.
Yep, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what have you been, I know what you've been doing for the last couple of weeks. So why don't you tell everybody else what you've been up to the last couple of weeks?
Oh, man, there's been a lot. I mean, I changed jobs. I got a new full-time job and just something, easy, working at Dunkin' Donuts, nothing big. But besides doing that, doing everything for Parapost and the Global Ghost Hunt, which is coming up, which I'm excited about. Other than that, just personal things and having a good time.
I'm sure this is common knowledge about your, new girlfriend and stuff.
Like that. Yep. New girlfriend. Yep.
So
yep.
Make an appearance on our show at one point, or
I don't know. She's normally shy, so right now she's, I think, taking a nap behind me somewhere. So.
Oh, okay. But, so she is there.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Is she there a lot, or?
Yeah. Well, she's been here since Thursday. So.
Oh wow. Okay. Well, yeah, that's good. So.
Yeah,
you seem happy. I saw some nice pictures.
Oh, up on totally Facebook happy
with you guys by the waterfall and stuff like that. And you'd happen to do a commercial for your show that you had today.
Yep, I had to do it.
That was a good show, man.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
She seemed like a very, very nice, kind woman.
She was, and she has an amazing book that talks about her near-death experience. Yeah. Unfortunately, we couldn't get too in-depth with it because then there would be no point of buying the book. But we did get to a little bit into it, and it was pretty intense of what she experienced.
Yeah, cool. Well, something interesting. I went over to Amazon just to take a look.
Oh, Jesus!
My book, and this is on Amazon, by the way, people. So you just type in BJ Laverty and you can find my my cookbook. Believe it or not, somebody left a review.
No.
On my book, who bought my book, and I didn't realize that, and I hadn't checked it in a while, right? And Tanner, who's going to be on Through the Lens on Tuesday, he says if your book gets to a number of copies, then you're in the higher percentage of book sales or authors or whatever. I'm one away from that
number.
Yeah.
I'm one okay, away guys. From that number. Everyone go out and search up BJ Laverty on Amazon and let's get this cookbook I'm telling you right now, you're gonna love it. My aunt loves it. So let's buy it. Let's get going.
She got one?
Yeah.
Oh,
I told you that a while back when she, because of the whole cancer thing, I wanted her to start eating better.
Yeah, so how does she like it?
I mean, she loves it. It has recipes in it that she never had before, so she's trying. Unfortunately, she just became gluten-free, so that kind of a little bit. But,
yeah, well, a lot of those recipes in there, you don't have to worry about the
gluten. Yeah, which is great, yeah.
But, so. I'm one away, man, from that rating that Tanner was talking about. And we'll talk about that kind of stuff on Tuesday on Through the Lens with me and Lex. So, and that's at 4 o'clock. But and some other good news. We had another team sign up today for Global Ghost Hunt. We had a team sign up yesterday. So we're getting there. We're getting there. Absolutely. We're getting closer. It's close.
Absolutely. It's close.
It's very, very close.
Very close.
But and who knows? We were talking before the show about October and me possibly coming down there in October, to do something with you. We won't say what it is right now, but if it happens or if it doesn't happen, we don't want to, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But
that happens. I'm definitely going to come down there, and we can do that event if it happens. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. So,
you're not that far, to be honest.
No, I'm not.
You're only I think you're only 7 hours away from me.
Yeah, not too far. Yeah, if you take a plane, it's not bad.
Yeah, a plane, I'd be there in an hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, driving is what sucks.
Oh, I love the driving. I love it.
There you go.
Yeah, so let's see who's in the room. Oh, Chris is here. And so why don't we get started on this documentary? I think you guys are going to enjoy this. The guy that's actually doing the commentating or narrating the video, we've had him before, so
yeah,
I like this guy. He's actually really, really good. So anyhow, let's get started. And thank you very much, Chris. I appreciate that. Is it the keto diet? It is the keto diet.
And it is.
Yeah. And there's a couple of good recipes in there that are really good. But now that I've gotten up to that echelon of selling the book, I'm thinking about doing another one, but this one's going to be on desserts for keto.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That would be good.
Top 15. So
there you go.
Anyhow, other than that, let's get started. And thanks, Chris.
There you go. Thanks, Chris.
Wow, that's a long code.
Right?
Wow. That is a long code.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's how many books I've sold. No, I'm just...
Yeah, right. There you go, Chris.
Yeah,
thanks, cool. Buddy.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate that. Okay, so let's get started. Here we go. Yeah, but there it is. Yeah. There we go.
I've seen the bad side of him. I've seen him stab people and shoot people.
He was definitely a sick boy. The medication he used to take would knock a horse over.
Nothing like a bit of gang warfare now and again anyway to liven things up.
I'm Fred Dynage, the official biographer to the Cray twins. I found writing the Cray twins story a very hard thing to do. You see, really, the twins and I had absolutely nothing in common. I would sit for hours and listen to their stories of the often brutal crimes they committed, and here I was, someone who hadn't got a criminal record at all. They could never, ever say sorry. They could never express regret for the things they'd done, or even for the families of the people who'd been killed or hurt. Now, 25 years later, I'm revisiting the Cray story and meeting their associates, looking again at the most notorious gangsters in British history to see just how right I got it. The book I wrote with the Cray twins, Reg and Ron, Our Story, was published in 1988. It was a success at the time, and since then I've continued with my life as a TV presenter and journalist. But nonetheless, their story has always held a fascination for me. I first became involved with the Cray twins in the mid-1980s. I was introducing Coast to Coast, the ITV regional news programme for the south of England. We featured a father who wanted to thank Addenbrooke's Hospital for saving his daughter's life with a transplant. A few days later, I received a letter from one Reggie Cray saying he'd seen the film, he'd been very moved by it, he'd like to help the father raise some money. And he thought a good way of doing this would be to get prisoners at Parkhurst to a good artist to do paintings, which could then be auctioned off. I put Reggie Cray in touch with the father, and sure enough, some paintings arrived. We ran another feature on the paintings themselves, and a few days later, another letter from Parkhurst Prison from Reggie Cray saying, saw the item, loved it very much. Would you like to come to Parkhurst and meet me? It was an invitation. As a journalist, I couldn't refuse. I did go and see him. We got on fine. He said, come back and see me again. I did. And on that second occasion, he said, Ronnie and I are looking for someone to write our life story. Would you like to do it? And I found myself saying, well, yeah, I'd like to think about it. I'm retracing their extraordinary lives again, from their childhood to their heyday to their demise, and meeting key people for the very first time. It all began when the twins were born on October the 24th, 1933. Reggie was born first, then Ron, 10 minutes later. It's the Cray twins' roots here in the East End of London that's the key to their whole story. Frankie Fraser knew them when they were just kids. He watched them grow from young tearaways into hardened gangsters. I'm looking forward to meeting Frankie because the twins spoke such a lot about him, and Reggie said to me once that Frankie Fraser was the only person they were actually ever frightened of because he was mad. Frankie Fraser, it's lovely to see you after all these years, and what a fantastic setting to be in, this Repton Boxing Club.
I love it. It's terrific. The atmosphere is still as it always been.
Why do they call you mad, Frankie Fraser?
Well, after being certified three times, I can't expect to be called fucking sane, Frankie, can I?
Reggie and Ronnie, you knew them when they were kids.
Yes, I did, yeah. Well, I used to, when I was 19, I'd just come out of Chelmsford Prison, and I used to drink with their father, this during the war. And sometimes when the pubs used to shut at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we'd normally go to a club, or sometimes I'd go home with their dad and have a meal. Well, they were 9 years of age. They used to call me Uncle Frank. Years later, we had a good laugh about it, yeah.
What were they like when they were kids?
They were all right, yeah. Very respectful, yes. Their mum and dad brought them up well that way, yeah. So he wasn't really a very good influence on them. Their mum was their best one of them. They worshipped her.
Can you describe her to me?
Well, she's a typical lovely mum, as mums should be.
Yeah.
She worshipped them.
My mother was simply a wonderful woman. No man ever had a finer mother. We often had no money and very little food, but she always made sure that Reggie and Charlie and I had something to eat and something half decent to wear. She never gave in to despair or frustration, even when times were bleak and the future seemed to hold nothing. I would kill any man who spoke ill of my mother.
The teenage twins were developing promising boxing careers. Reg was the London school's champion and even turned professional. But their chance to forge a career in boxing was cut short when they got into one fight too many and ended up in the Old Bailey at just 16. From then on, the boxing promoters wouldn't touch them.
Reggie Cray had asked me to write the twins' life story, but first I had to meet his twin brother, Ron, who was at Broadmoor Hospital for the Criminally Insane at Crowthorne in Berkshire. And I'll always remember, as I was walking towards that very forbidding main entrance into the hospital, a white limousine pulled up alongside me with blackened windows.
One of the back windows dropped down, a puff of smoke came out, and I heard a voice saying, "Fred Dinage," and I said, "Yes." And he said, "I'm so-and-so and so-and-so." I won't mention his name. But he said, "I run a lot of London's underworld. I'm a close friend of Ronnie Cray. If you write this book, you're going to look after him, aren't you?" And I said, "Of course." It'll be very honest. He said, "That's okay." Window went up.
Of course.
The car drove Ronnie Cray. We had our meeting. We chatted for an hour or so. Got on okay. At the end of it, Ronnie Cray looked at me and said, "I agree with Reg. You can write our story." During that first meeting with Ronnie, it was hard to imagine him as an eager young man. In Broadmoor, he was quiet, but underneath, there was something unnerving.
Whenever I met the Cray twins, it was obvious they still had enormous power, even though they were inside. Whatever they wanted, they generally got. And someone who helped them in that direction, a great friend of the Cray twins, indeed a man they had tremendous respect for, is a guy called Freddie Foreman, a real godfather of British crime. Never actually a member of the Cray firm, but certainly what you might call an enforcer.
He didn't look like a very nice fella.
In Bleach's here, this Italian cafe in the East End of London. And what's come through to me, all of this, is that you are just about the most respected figure still in the East End. How did you come to meet Reggie and Ronnie?
Well, I met them through Charlie, their brother Charlie, who was older than him. And then the twins were only young then, but they was... There was something about them that was destined for them to be notorious, you know, because they was a bit unruly, to say the least. I remember the first time I went to their home, they were out in the backyard punching the daylights out of each other, you know, and the old man and Charlie had to go out and stop them. But he used to say to me, "Charlie, have a word with them, you know, the twins, and see if he can talk some sense into them." But of course, they was too young and fiery. They wouldn't listen to what you had to say. Going one ear and out the other, they still do what they wanted to do.
Ronnie and Reggie were called up for national service when they were 18. The twins fought conscription and spent 2 years running from the army. At times they got caught, and legend has it they found themselves locked up in the Tower of London.
Oh, wow.
Writing the Cray twins story wasn't particularly easy because of the limited access I could get to them. I could only see them once a month and then for just a couple of hours. So it took several years to actually write it. And an added complication was the fact that Reggie moved prison a few times. And every time we had to meet in a huge visiting hall, which didn't make it any easier. At Broadmoor, the problem with Ronnie wasn't quite so bad. They gave us a private room to talk in, so that showed the amount of trust there was with the authorities there.
This extraordinary footage has never been seen before on television. It shows me talking to Ronnie Cray in the corridors of Broadmoor. Ronnie was legendary for always being immaculately dressed, as you can see here. And they called him the Colonel because of the way he marched everywhere.
But the Cray twins could actually reach you, find you almost anywhere, no matter where you were, even though they were both inside. I'll always remember one Sunday morning, I was having a bit of emergency dental treatment at a hospital in Portsmouth. I just sat back in the dentist's chair. He was just about to stick the needle in my gum when I heard a phone ring outside. The receptionist knocked on the door, stuck her head round the door and said, "There's a phone call for Mr. Dinage." The dentist was horrified. He said, "What?" He said, "Who is it?" She said, "It's someone called Reggie Cray." "God," said the dentist, "you better answer it."
I'm Fred Dinage, official biographer of the Cray twins. They told me their story over a number of years from their prison cells. And now I'm revisiting that story with help from their associates to see how right I got it.
Writing a book about the Cray twins wasn't easy because it was difficult to find out the truth, to separate fact from fiction. Virtually everybody I've met has had good things to say about them, but I've got a feeling that Lenny Hamilton and Billy Frost might have a somewhat different account of things.
When he got him around the neck, they started cutting him down the back, stabbing him.
Reggie had a great big hunting knife. He went, fucking properly, put out his guts.
This pub was run by the Cray's mum, Violet. Firm member Billy and jewel thief Lenny knew it well.
How did you both meet the Cray twins?
Well, I met them when I was about 18. I was on the run from the army. I used to go to a dance hall called the Royal over Tottenham. It used to be the, like, the in place at the time. And that's where I first met Ron and Reg. And I first met them when I'd been out of the army about 6 weeks. And I was walking down Bedette Road off of Mile End. And I see this big fella having a fight with these two young fellas. So I went over and helped them. They got away. He was a copper, he arrested me. He said, do you know who they was? I said, no, who are they? He said, they're the Cray twins. He said, I was arresting them, they're on the run from the army. The next time I met them was the snooker rule. I was playing snooker and then this fella tapped me on the shoulder and it's her man. He said, don't mend me, do you? I said, no, I do you? He said, I'm Reggie Cray. He said, you helped us when the old Bill was holding us. So the other one went, yeah, and I'm Ronnie. And I looked, I couldn't tell him apart, could you? You couldn't tell him apart.
The 21-year-old twins' first business venture was a billiard hall, but trouble followed soon. Ron was put away for GBH after shooting and wounding a man. So Reg opened up their first nightclub, the Double R, as a tribute to his imprisoned twin. Billy Frost worked for the Crays and was a member of what became known as The Firm.
What was your role in The Firm?
I used to drive and do little different things, like, you know.
He was one of the most trusted on The Firm, Billy.
Was you?
Well,
I used to drink with him in the 60s. You never even mentioned the Crays' name.
Still only in their mid-20s, and they were running clubs and protection rackets with sidelines in fraud, armed robbery and arson.
Were they greatly feared at the time?
Oh, they were, yeah. Over a period of time, their reputation spread. But when it first started, people went to them because if they had a troublesome business, a nightclub or public house where it's a bit rough, they would welcome the twins into the business and put them on a wage because they would have no more trouble. You know, it was a sort of protection business that was beneficial to both sides.
High-profile celebrities were attracted to the danger of being associated with the Crays. Film stars, music idols and politicians were queuing up to be friends with the glamorous gangsters.
Reggie and Ronnie were always surrounded by celebrities, weren't they? Mm-hmm. You know, show business people, singers, etc. What do you remember about that?
Well, their reputation spread even to America because when all the stars came over here and appeared at the Pagal or different shows in the West End, they always sought out the twins for some reason or other. I don't know why, but it wasn't as though they were supplying them with drugs or anything, you know, to get any drug. They wouldn't touch anything like cocaine or puff. They never used anything like that.
Which celebrities do you recall?
Oh, well, bloody hell, they never stopped. I mean, Barbara Windsor was the first one, of course, because she became a great friend. And she helped my son Jamie out in his career when he started acting. But in the back going back further to the 60s, Jane Mansfield was one with her husband. But then there was Tony Bennett, Judy Garland, Sophie Tucker, Billy Daniels.
It was on that night, with Ron and me done up like dogs' dinners in our bow ties and dinner jackets and surrounded by the rich and famous, that I realised we were well on the way to making it to the very top. To the very top. I felt so powerful that night. I felt nothing was going to stop us.
As the twins' power base grew, their personal lives moved on. Reg had fallen for Francis Shea, whom he married in April 1965, and it was no secret that his brother Ron was gay.
What were your feelings about Ronnie?
Right.
I liked Ronnie, I really liked him. He was really, to me, a nice fella, you know. I've seen the bad side of him, I've seen him stab people and shoot people, but I still liked him. And Reggie was the same. I used to drive Reg about and all. A lot of the time, Reg
was in like conflict within himself, if you know what I mean. I think he was discovering what he wanted to be. He had a beautiful wife, Frances. She was a lovely girl.
You know? What happened there?
He never ever had anything sexually to do with that girl. Which even the dad would tell you, that old Charlie.
And she died.
She killed herself, didn't she? Took her overdose.
Over there. Look what they done to her. Bill.
Oh, you know, Len, it's all supposition what you're saying.
No, it ain't. No, it ain't.
It is, Len. No,
Billy Exley told me. Billy Exley told me.
What did he know? He was dumb as arseholes, Billy Exley. He was.
Billy Exley.
I like these two that are fighting.
I know, I love it.
Frances committed suicide, overdosing on barbiturates, only 2 years after she married Reg. Rumors still persist about her death, and some people don't think it was even suicide.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Another extraordinary chapter in the life of the twins.
Did you
For
think
me,
that?
Their personal and criminal yeah. lives were fascinating to write. However, everyone, it seemed, wanted a piece of their story. We discovered early on that a famous rock star had also got the rights to the Cray book. So Ronnie said, that's not a problem, give him a ring and tell him we want you to write our story. So I rang him up and his attitude was, over my dead body, you're not writing it, I've got the rights. So I told Ronnie, who said, leave it with me, I'll sort it out. And a few days later, the aforementioned rock star rang me up and said, actually, I've changed my mind, you can write the book if you want to. Interesting, that, isn't it?
Wow.
Could you see that they were a little bit different, that they were going to be
Yes,
leaders?
Oh yeah, you could tell they were going to go to the top, yeah, definitely. Ronnie was the lively one. Reggie was a bit more laid back.
Can you paint a picture of the East End for me in the 50s and 60s?
Well, there was something about it. They had that hustle and bustle, and people like were all with one another then.
There's a paradox about East End gangsters that's always puzzled me. On the one hand, they were boys who loved their mum and went to church, but on the other, they were vicious gangsters who destroyed families.
I want to talk to a man who knew both twins very well and who indeed shared a landing at Parkhurst Prison with Reggie Cray for a number of years. That man, and he's quite a remarkable man, is called Bobby Cummins. Bobby, we're in this rather unique St Matthew's Church here in the East End. It's a special place, isn't it?
It is a special place because it's part of the community. It was where the community met. And, you know, though there were villains and all that, we have respect for the church.
I mean, you knew Reggie Cray as well as anybody, better than most. Mm. Tell me about Reggie.
Well, Reggie Cray, there was two sides of Reggie. There was the Reggie that, in business, you wouldn't want to mess with. You know, you're talking about one of the most serious bits of work. But there's also that compassionate side. Like, I learnt my rules off of people like that, like the Freddie Foremans and that, that you show respect. Love mum, love your family. If you don't respect your family, you don't respect no one. Kids were safe in our environment, and elderly people were safe in our environment. Villains weren't safe in our environment. You'd come over across the manor, your manor was your territory. You'd come across then, you started taking liberties, then we'd assault you.
The twins were violent lads, weren't they?
We were all violent, Fred. You know, and I've got to go hands up to it. You know, you live in that world. We live in other people's nightmares. That's our reality. And when you go out with a gun, or you go out with a tool, when people come looking for you, they come looking for your tool. And there's an old rule that we used to have. Better to be caught with one when you don't need it than caught without one when you do. Because if they jump out the motor on you, they're not coming to say hello. They're coming at you to cut you to pieces or shoot you or kill you. You subscribe to that world, you live by those rules, Fred. And you're groomed into it.
The twins grew up surrounded by East End gang warfare. It was a way of life for them. Frankie Fraser saw the twins rise to power.
Did Reg and Ron ever ask you to join them?
Yes, of course they did. But I was already then in prison. I said, well, I'll think about it. But then I went with the Richardsons.
The Cray twins weren't the only duo ruling London's underworld. A rival gang, the Richardson brothers, Charlie and Eddie, were based south of the river. The Crays told me they had a reputation so fierce it earned them respect from the hardest of criminals. They became famous for their brutal torture techniques.
The Richardsons, wow. What were they like?
What's going on with very intelligent. In
Miles, like good. England, good. England has been literally our top thing.
The other part,
for the entire episode of season
East
one.
East End, yeah. And South London. What was the difference? What was the problem between them?
There was no problem really. There's always a bit of rivalry. Like any football teams, same thing, isn't it? Nothing that couldn't be solved. And it's nothing like a bit of gang warfare now and again, anyway, to liven things up.
I always got the feeling, in fact, Reggie said they were quite wary of you. They would never, ever take a liberty with mad Frankie Fraser.
Well, that was their way of looking at it, and that was good.
Yeah.
And I, vice versa.
Were you frightened or wary of Reggie and
no,
Ronnie?
No, of course not. I'm frightened of nothing and no one. Never have been and never will be.
Good for you.
It's as simple as that.
Cray twin number three.
Exactly.
The triplets.
I'm Fred Dinage, the official biographer to the Cray twins. The Cray twins' only regret, really, was the mistake they made in their eyes, that they shouldn't have committed the crimes themselves. They should have got other people to do it for them. There were many times when I thought, should I really be writing this book in the first place? But then I thought, I'm a journalist. This is part of our criminal history. It should be told.
And now I'm going back to that story to make sure I got it right. Talking to Cray's associates about the highs and terrible lows of the infamous gangsters.
Out of the two twins, I preferred Ronnie, though he was definitely a sick boy. He was sick. The medication he used to take would knock a horse over.
Lenny Hamilton was an East End villain and known associate of the Crays. He got on the wrong side of the twins after an altercation with a member of the firm. He vividly recalls the night when Ron's mental instability caused him real harm, an indication that Ronnie was starting to lose control.
When I got up there, I knew something was dodgy because I'd geezer staying that side of the walls, geezer standing there. And I said, oh, out there, Lenny's out there. But when I got out there, it was a little kitchen. And he was standing facing me, with his back was to the gas stove then. And he said, I'll sit there, he had an old armchair in here. So I sat there. So he went, he was going to one, didn't he? You couldn't hear what he was saying. And all of a sudden he went, oh, you can go now. So as I got up to go, he went, get hold of him. So two of his men got hold of me. And as he turned, I see these pokers on the gas. They were like cold steels with sharper knives on, but I call them pokers, like, you know. He came over to me and I had black curly hair at the time. Burnt all the hair off me, burnt the suit off me. He went and got another one, held it across there, burnt all my eyebrows off of me. But that's how I'm nearly blind in that eye and almost deaf in that ear. Because then he went and got an hammer. You know what they beat steak with, them hammers? And he smashed me in the ear and done my eardrum and all the blood come out, like, you know. And then he went back and got another poker. Can I swear? He said, now I'm going to burn your fucking eyes out. And he's coming at me with a poker.
Heckling
and someone shouted out,
right.
No, Ron, not that. And he just stopped, like that. He said, right, you can go now.
How did you feel about Ronnie Cray after that?
I hated him. I didn't like him much before. People were terrified of him. I wasn't old, I admit it, you know. Because you never knew what you can do next.
We were wicked little bastards, really. Wicked little bastards. Really. Always getting into scraps with other kids and sometimes with each other. Right from early on, when we were just nippers, we had a gang in our street. And we used to have brick battles with kids from other streets. We loved to fight, Ron and I. Maybe it was because we came from a family of fighters.
Right?
Maybe because we were brought up in an area of fighting men. Where did it go wrong, do you think, for the Cray twins?
Well, they wasn't very brainy in many ways, and they did get lured by some funny people and get led into different situations that they couldn't handle. It was too much for them.
What did for Ronnie, of course, in the end, was the shooting of George Cornell.
Yes.
What sort of bloke was Cornell?
Well, that's the tragedy. He grew up with him, George Cornell, but he fell in love with a girl from South London, from Ealing Castle. Very nice girl, top shoplifter. Fell in love with her, married her and moved over to her. And Reggie and Ronnie couldn't handle that. They thought he had deserted them.
Tension between George Cornell and the Crays grew. On the 9th of March 1966, Ron shot and killed him in the Blind Beggar pub. Ron told me in that moment he'd never felt so alive.
And George Cornell?
Well, I just don't know what come over Ronnie. That's why I say with those on those drugs, when he got these manic urges on him, he would go out and do something really dangerous. He was a dangerous person, and nobody knew what he was going to do. He just went and did it. I mean, he just walked in there in front of witnesses and loads of people and shot the man in the head, you know. And it's a miracle shot because he's blind as a bat. He couldn't see to drive or anything. It was just a fluke, really.
It was a lucky shot.
The following year, Reggie killed two. He stabbed associate Jack McVitie in the head, chest and stomach. Reg always said to me that Jack the Hat got what he deserved at that fateful party on Evering Road, calling him no better than a sewer rat. Freddie Foreman was found guilty of being an accessory to the murder.
Ronnie Cray smashed him in the face with a glass and told him to go, to use the F word and go. And he went out of the room and he turned around and came back in again. And he could have walked out of the house, he could have gone out. And they sat there and they were screaming at each other and arguing. And it went on for quite a considerable time. And there was witnesses there, two young guys who were croupiers, who had made statements to this effect, and a lot of other witnesses made statements. But they were never produced at the trial, those statements, which they should have been. And that would prove that it wasn't premeditated to kill him that night. But it was got out of hand. And that's when a knife was produced by one of the firm, pulled it out of the kitchen and gave it to one of the twins, which was a stupid thing to do. And that's how he got killed. But it wasn't intentional that night. Charlie was the one who always came to me and said, can you help the twins out? They're in trouble, they've done something stupid, they've done something silly. When Jack the Hat, I was in my bed at 3 o'clock in the morning. I was asleep when all this thing was going on. And they wanted me to help them out to clear up the scene afterwards.
Were you involved in any of the killings or anything like that?
Well, I avoided that. Didn't want to know about things like that, you know.
Didn't it means you did. Cares, but
not that sort of thing, you know.
Reggie always told me that only he and Ronnie knew the truth about how Jack the Hat's body was disposed of. Member of the firm, Billy, has his own theory.
What happened to the body?
Burnt it. A pole. They had a pole.
Yeah.
He had a breaker's yard and he used to smoke a lot of alley.
That's in my book.
So he used to dump them in a big deep freeze.
That's right.
He had a big chest freezer. You freeze them up there for about a week. Then you know them saws they cut the meat and the fish with. He had a whole one
the
of them. He used to saw them up. Put them in the smelt, they've gone in and out.
That's
body.
Where the bodies went. But he's my mate, Jack, he's a good fella. Yeah. I've had some light laughs with him, you know.
I mean, why did Reg kill McVitie, do you think?
Well, by then, Jack the Hat had got out of hand. He was flash and saying nasty things about him and everything like that. So that, therefore, he had to go. There's no doubt about it, yeah. A shame, because at one time he had been a nice guy.
It was the Jack McVitie and George Cornell murders that gave Scotland Yard enough evidence to arrest the twins. At 6 a.m. on the 9th of May 1968, the police smashed their way into Ron's flat and arrested them both. the brothers gave up without a struggle.
Did you go to the police with evidence about?
No.
No.
You didn't do it. But then when I was in prison.
Sure, yeah. Good Lord.
And they got a letter smuggled into me. If the police come to see me, don't talk to them. Otherwise, they're going to shoot my two kids.
Lenny decided the safer course was to put the Crays away. He went into the witness stand and testified against them in their 39-day murder trial. The Old Bailey was full every day, and tickets in the public gallery were selling for £5 each. Ronnie told me he was betrayed in court by nearly every man in the firm.
Lenny, what about the trial itself? How much of an ordeal for you was the trial of the Cray twins?
Oh, well, the judge looked at me in the box and he says to me, "You feel all right?" I said, "Not really." And they got me a chair to sit down because Ronnie Cray kept staring at me, going, pulling faces, you know, because he was only just down there where I was here. So they got me a chair. When I sat on a chair, being little, I couldn't even see over the top. So that's why the judge done it, you know. If they didn't have sent that letter in, I wouldn't have spoke to the old Bill. You don't do them things. You know, because I was a thief myself. So I was a jewel thief and I've blown saved and that, you know. But you don't grass up people.
It was at the Old Bailey that a young Bobby Cummins got to know the twins.
It was funny, because when I got dumped and sawn off, that's when I met Reggie and Ronnie. Because they was at the Old Bailey, it was the old Bailey in them days, and they was walking along the landing, because they was on trial when I was a young kid. I knew who they was, but I didn't know them at that time. And it was Ronnie. He went to me, "What are you doing here?" I said, "Right, I'm here for criminal sawn off armed robbery." He went, "You cheeky little..." So he said, "Fair play to you." He said, "I'll probably see a lot of you in here." I said, "You probably will."
On the 4th of March, 1969, the Crays were found guilty of murder and sentenced to life. The judge said they should serve no less than 30 years. Freddie Foreman was sentenced to 10 years inside for his part in the Jack McVitie murder.
10 years.
10 years. Tricky question, Fred, but I'll put it to you because you don't have to answer it. Were there other murders, do you think? I mean, do you think the Mad Axeman was murdered by them or via them or others, do you think?
Well, it's say I don't really want to discuss about the matter because I stood trial for the murder.
But you were acquitted?
I was acquitted, yeah. And rightly so. But and also I was charged with another murder 12 years after it was supposed to have happened. And I was acquitted of that also. So, you know, I don't want to really discuss or talk about things like that.
Yeah, that was a pretty obvious question that he wasn't going to answer.
It's always somebody's husband or somebody's son, isn't it? You know,
the Crays were finally banged up where the police wanted them to be. Even though they tried and failed to convict the twins of other murders, the job was done. Justice for George Cornell and Jack McVitie had been served.
Wow.
I'm Fred Dinage, the official biographer of the Cray twins. Writing the book was a big responsibility, and I spent 4 years visiting Reggie and Ronnie in prison, listening to their stories. It wasn't always easy, like the reaction I first got in Parkhurst.
When you first come in, everyone was iffy, because we've had journalists before. I mean, I've had it myself, where they want to do your life story, they want to write the book, and then they write it the way they want to write it. They don't write the real way. And that made us very iffy about people who wanted to write books, journalists, all that sort of thing. You did it the right way. And so that gave them a bit more confidence, and you was regular. You know, you weren't just going up, getting a little bit, and then doing your research and then padding out the book. You was actually writing how it should have been done. You were well respected, you know, for what you did. And you're still well respected today. I respect you today.
So the Cray twins book was due for publication, and certain newspapers showed a lot of interest in serialisation, particularly the Sunday Times, the Sunday Mirror and the News of the World. I urged the Cray twins to go for the Sunday Times because of the credibility that it would have given them, which is what they were really seeking after all. But of course the twins, being the twins, went for the most money and went for the News of the World. The Sunday Mirror, who'd been very supportive up until then, were very, very cross, and they took a somewhat different tack all of a sudden. The headline said, "Fury over new Craze Hall." They were angry that the Crays were apparently going to receive some remuneration for writing their life story, and they suggested that I, as the author, should be taken off the television. I was outraged at the sheer hypocrisy of the whole thing, but then it all died down, and time is, after all, a great healer. For Reggie and Ronnie, time didn't heal. It just went on and on in prison. Reggie said to me that life in Parkhurst was a constant battle for sanity and survival.
Parkhurst, one of the most respectful places I've ever been in my life for good manners, because we was all tooled up, every one of us in there.
Tooled up inside prison?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
With what?
Well, we nicked a gardening shear. Reggie had half, I had half, so I had a blade about that long. And we would wrap that in a towel under there. Then we used to have the grey overcoats in them days, the poacher's coats they used to call them. We carried a blade in that when you were around the exercise yard, because if it kicked off, as I say, it was a very respectful place, because we'd all say good morning to each other. No one jumped the queue, because everyone was a potential killer in there. You know, Parkhurst was Britain's Alcatraz. You know, you could be sitting there watching telly, Fred, and someone come in with a boiling jug of milk with sugar in it, tip it over your head and burn your face off. That's the reality of prison.
It was the same reality the Cray's biggest rivals, the Richardson brothers, were living after the law caught up with them too. At one point in Parkhurst, it turned out that Charlie Richardson and Reggie Cray were about to do time together.
Now, there was a war between Reggie Cray and Charlie Richardson. They were both banged up in Parkhurst at the same time. Potentially explosive situation. Yeah. You, in fact, brokered the peace, did you not?
Well, the thing was, I was friends with Charlie and Reggie. It had been a long war going on between both families, you know, and you know, people were very heavy, because you've got to look at, if it goes off in there, what side are you going to take? Because you couldn't be true to two. You know, you had to take one side or the other. It got to a stage where people were going, like, you know, the bond's got to be made. You can't walk about wondering if it's going to go big time. And so they had to get someone who both of them knew and trusted. The word was put, like, you go and sit with them and sort out. They was either going to have to live together or die.
For the Crays, dying in prison was a real possibility, and prison life without their twin was hard. They saw each other as often as the authorities would allow.
Whenever we meet, we spend the day talking. We don't talk about the past, we talk about the future. Ron and I have always believed we'll be released one day. We have to believe it, it's all there is. We talk about the houses we'll live in together in the country and about the places we want to see before we get too old. For years now, we've talked about going to India and China, two of the most beautiful and interesting countries in the world. But am I right? In a sense, Reggie was always a marked man inside Parkhurst. He'd always got a sort of price on his head, in as much as the young guns in there. If they could have marked him in some way, they'd get themselves a reputation.
Well, you've got to look at it, the hierarchy in prison. You know, you're talking about people like Reggie Cray, Charlie Richardson. If you cut one of them, I'm the guy who cut Reggie Cray, now you're a celebrity, right? You're going up the ladder. But if we allowed that to happen, then the next target would have been Charlie, then it would have gone all round, and one of us, it might have been my turn next time round. And the thing was, we were prepared to kill them if necessary. We weren't worried about that. If it come down to that, better them go than we go, but send a message out, you hurt one of ours, then you hurt in all of ours, and we're going to come and get you, you're not getting away.
The twins' mum, Violet, visited them twice a week until she died in 1982. Ronnie served most of his sentence in the psychiatric hospital Broadmoor. Reggie was a Category A prisoner for much of his time in maximum security prisons across the country.
Do you think the law was a bit harsh on Reg and Ronnie Cray?
I think the law was very unfair to them. Very unfair. Ordinary nice people like yourself, untouchable in their world, and quite rightly, women and children, untouchable.
Even when their contemporaries had been released, the twins were refused parole. They weren't given the opportunity to leave their gangster days behind them, like Bobby Cummins.
Now, your own career has been quite remarkable, because you were a baton, and you were a violent man, you were a villain.
Yeah.
But by God, you've turned things around
Tell us what you're up to now.
It was Charlie Richardson got me into education. He went to me, Bobby, and Reggie as well. To be fair, Reggie went, Bobby, you know, you're going to wind up bang up here for the rest of your life, or dead, or you can go the right way.
So your charity is called Unlock?
Yep. It's Unlock, National Association of Reformed Offenders. And these kids matter to me. They're my kids. They're my kids dying on the street. And I don't want my kids for the future and laying on the bed that me, Reggie and Ronnie and Charlie laid on the bed that 200 people slept on before us, cut their wrists and urinated and God knows what else they've done in it. If you want people to change, what you've got to give them is the opportunity to change. The Crays never had the opportunity.
I wonder what would have happened if the Crays had been given the chance to go straight. When I was writing the book, both twins told me they'd lead an honest life if released. Ronnie never left Broadmoor, and Reggie was only released on compassionate grounds a few weeks before he died.
I was with him, Reggie, when he died. I sat up next to him in the bed when I released him. And Joey Powell and Johnny Nash, we went down to see him at this hotel. And I sat on the bed with him when he took his last breath, you know. It's weird that we went there that day. It seemed that he was waiting to see us before he passed away. It was weird. The whole family's died in prison, sad, really.
Mm. Before Reggie died, was he able to speak to you at all?
Yeah, yeah.
What did he say?
Oh, he was very, yeah. We left him, and he said, don't go. He said, you're coming back. We said, we're going to the bar because the doctor arrived to give him an injection. And when we went back down again, he was completely unconscious. Then he died there. As I sat on the side of the bed with him.
How did you feel?
Oh, it was like the finish of an era, really. Sad.
The Crays told me how loyal Freddie had been throughout their lives, so it seemed fitting then that Freddie should be with him in Reggie's last moments. Reg died from cancer at the age of 66. Ronnie suffered a heart attack and died at 61. Their older brother, Charlie, died aged 73. So all three Crays ended their lives, if you like, here, but you didn't come to any of those services?
No. I didn't come to the services out of respect. And, you know, people would say, oh, you know, go to a funeral. It turned into a circus, and I didn't like that. I keep them in my heart. You know, I've got my memories when we used to laugh, have a cup of tea together, and discuss villainy together. And I'm not condoning what they did, you know. But in that life, we all did it because that was our life.
So what do the people I met think about the extraordinary Cray story?
And I'll never forget one thing Ronnie said, never make excuses for what I've done. He didn't regret anything, he did it his way. And Reggie was the same.
Sharp dressers.
They lived their life the
way
they meant to live it, and they lived by their rules. And our code of ethics, and they never sold out.
It's surprising how many followers they've got all over the country, you know.
So how can they still do that? How can they still have that kind of charisma, if you like, all these years?
You never had gangsters like them, did you, in Houston? You never had gangsters like them.
What sort of a legacy is it leave for young generations that are coming through to say, well, look what happened to them. You want to follow in their footsteps? The three brothers all died in prison. Sad story. And it doesn't advertise committing crime, does it?
So what have I learned then from this journey back into the Crays legacy? Mm. Quite a lot, actually. I've learned a number of things I didn't know about Reggie and Ronnie Cray. I've certainly learned a lot about the people who surrounded them. And most surprising of all, I think, in many ways, is I've actually learned, I think, that Jack McVitie and George Cornell, their two victims, especially Cornell, were actually nicer men than Reggie and Ronnie ever portrayed to me. But the biggest lesson of all, I suppose, is the one that I already knew, and that is, except in exceptional circumstances, crime really doesn't pay. Certainly for Reggie and Ronnie Cray, it didn't.
Well, now.
Well,
well as London woke up on that sunny May morning in 1968. Two sleepy gangsters were...
That is it, basically. Then there's a little bit there, and that's really about it. So, no,
if you want to watch a, if you want to watch a great movie on the Kray twins, check out Legend with Tom Hardy. He plays both Kray twins, and it's absolutely an amazing show or amazing movie. I don't know if it's completely true story based on them, but it's based off the Kray twins, and it's an amazing movie.
And what's the movie called, sir?
Legend.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll check it out and see if I can find it somewhere.
You'll love it, man. It's hilarious. Because Tom Hardy, one of the Kray twins, he comes in and he goes, I came here for a gunfight, and you people don't want to have a gunfight. A gunfight means you bring a gun and you fight, and everybody's just standing in the restaurant. And then he walks out and he goes, you guys are a bunch of... And he calls them some name and like basically saying they're bitches, and then walks out. It's the funniest thing ever, but you got to see it. Tom Hardy did an amazing job acting, so you got to check it out.
I will. I'll definitely check it out. Man, it might be, I wonder if it's still on Netflix.
Yeah.
It might be on Netflix. We'll
see.
Yeah,
I think it, yeah.
Anyhow, that's it, guys. That's it for, we're back. We're back for our second season. This is the first episode of our second season. How exciting.
Absolutely.
Not sure what we're doing next week, but... There's always someone.
Always
someone. So, but I want to thank you, AJ.
Oh, thank you.
And everybody in the audience. And thank you for stopping by. And obviously, nice seeing Chris and the other people in the room. And thank you, Chris. It is a great kickoff. I like it. I like doing the mobsters. I might do a few more. I like doing the mobsters. I think it's pretty cool. So, and you know a little bit about that world.
Yes, I do. Unfortunately, yes. My family was involved with the Gambino crime family back in the day, and I know a little bit about it. So maybe we'll have a little talk on it next time we do a gangster.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny because I know I've been talking about wanting to get a judge up.
Yeah.
Well, lo and behold, I forgot I am friends with the judge.
Even better, because I was reaching out to Frank DiCaprio, an older man who's a very nice judge that's all over TikTok for helping people out. And I wanted to get him on the show. He has cancer recently, which is very unfortunate. Oh. He's a very nice guy. But I'm glad that you're friends with one, because I've been looking into it myself. So that's funny you said that.
Yeah, so I'm going to speak to him. I don't know what kind of judge he is. I'll have to find out. But... Okay. I am going to speak to him and see if he wouldn't mind coming up and us interviewing him. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So, other than that, I guess that's it. I guess that's it.
Well, so. Kray twins, thank you so much for starting off our season 2, but case closed.
But is it? Is case closed? Is it?
Is it? Yeah, is it? No.
It's case really closed.
Okay, thanks, it's guys. Case closed.
Good night, everyone.
Night, everyone.
See you next week.
Bye.